the National Archives podcast series. Linking Data, Linking Lives. Creating a website using linked data. Presented by Jane Stevenson.
A lot of what linked data is aiming to do is around narratives and stories and storytellings and linking data up in different kinds of ways. So I've got a few kind of inspiring quotes here. I think kind of sum up the sort of mindset that we're looking at with humans presented with pieces of information about people put things into the form of a story. Even isolated and inert pieces of evidence, a list, a letter, a map, a picture, can assume new and unimagined meanings when placed in juxtaposition with other fragments. So in a lot of ways, I think this is the vision. This is what we're trying to achieve with a linked data kind of perspective, with this way of doing things. What people often do when they're presented with a lot of different information and different fragments of information is try to tell a story. As humans, we have a tendency to want to put things into narratives, into stories, to look at relationships between people, objects, places, quotes, and all that kind of thing. So all of these slightly random images relate to George Bernard Shaw. And the idea is linked data provides a way for machines to be able to search and retrieve all sorts of different data about things that people want to know about. So I've got a few quite inspiring examples of the sorts of visions that I think are coming up now, and people are doing some really interesting work around this idea of narrative in history and presenting their data in very different ways to the kind of traditional archive description that we're used to. So this is a really good one to go and have a look at. There's a lot of good work going on in Australia, and this is historywall.nma.gov.au. And you can go here and you can just scroll down. And actually what it does if you scroll down is it gives you random events. It's quite a random thing. It generates random events over time, people, places and so forth. Or you can put in various search criteria and continue your search in that kind of way. So it's worth having a look at. This is another example. It's a guy called Tim Sherratt has been doing a lot of this work in Australia. And this is something that he's done, again, around storytelling. And if you go to this particular website, there's a really interesting presentation that he gives around this idea of bringing different fragments together, around the idea of allowing users to control the kind of stories that they want to tell, the sort of things that they want to know. And as you can see, this goes well beyond the idea of just telling stories using archives. It goes on to using all sorts of different media, all sorts of different data from different resources and bringing them together to tell the story that you'd like to tell or to explore what you'd like to explore. So this is quite a long quote from Tim, but I think it kind of encapsulates really what linked data is trying to achieve. So in order to do these kind of exciting things and bring data together in this kind of way, we need a data framework that sits beneath all this text. It needs to identify these things, to identify the people, the dates, the places, and to define these relationships, because it's relationships that create stories. And the really important thing here is the framework needs to be something that computers can understand and interpret, and that's really what we're moving towards. It's not just a human understanding. It's a means for computers to actually intelligently look at this data and create something for us. So if they see something that is a place name, they can head off and look for other people associated with that place. Instead of just presenting to our researchers, we'd be creating a whole series of points of connection, discovery, and aggregation. So I'd say that's the kind of goal of linked data. So the project that I'm going to talk to you about today is called Linking Lives. So very much on that theme of linking. We're focusing on the idea of linking people and organisations. And you can go ahead to find out more about it. We've got a blog where we're blogging about some of the issues and challenges involved in this project, of which there are many. We've already created our linked data, and what we now want to do is to create a user interface to actually show the value of linked data. I think there's been quite a lot of presentations and a lot of conferences that go into what linked data is and URIs and triple stores and RDF and vocabularies, and that's great. I mean, that's really important. But a lot of people like us, like archivists, a lot of non-technical people, when we're looking at this, what we want to know is, well, what's the value? What's the benefit? Why should I do something like this? So I felt that the next obvious stage in our project, once we'd created our linked data, enabled an output of archival descriptions as linked data, we then want to use that ourselves and show, well, this is the kind of thing that you can achieve. This is what we mean. Okay, so just very briefly, just to give the context, the project that we ran last year to create the linked data was called LOCA, and we now have a page for our linked data project at data.archiveshub.ac.uk. So on the homepage, you can link to a lot more information and find out a lot of in-depth information about how we went about this, how we modelled archival data, all the sorts of challenges we had with that. And you can look at some views of the data. So there's a lot there to look at. But what I wanted to pull out from, we've got these linked data views, which are a little bit like just a window onto some of the data that's available in our linked data store. But the really important thing that we've done in creating this data is to think about things as entities and things as events. Slightly odd when you look at it in a linked data-y way, but what I've pulled out there is, okay, this is a record for Beverly Skinner, but the important thing is that you don't just add her dates as an appendage to her name. The dates become events. The birth of Beverly Skinner becomes an event in itself. The death of Beverly Skinner becomes an event in itself. All that kind of thing needs to be modelled in the background in order to achieve the kinds of things that we want to achieve. Similarly, if you look at this record, and this is for the Women's Art Library, so we've got various information about the Women's Art Library. That's one of the entities, all the repositories that contribute to the hub. We want to talk about them. So we want to say, okay, what is this? It's a geospatial thing, so computers can understand what they're looking at. It gives information about postcodes, and you can see we have two different URIs for postcodes. So it's pulling out this kind of data. So this is kind of what's going on in the background to enable us to create these end-user interfaces. Okay, so that's the kind of basis. When you're creating linked data, it's about knowing what you want to say. It's about modelling the data, defining those relationships between the people and the places and the events and the subjects, deciding the sorts of vocabularies you're going to use, and the URIs, because everything has to be identified by a URI. Then we created the RDF XML, and very importantly, as part of the project, we are including links to external resources. And I think, to my mind, that's really key, because a lot of the value within linked data is about linking to other external sources, not just thinking in terms of archives or even just kind of cultural heritage resources, but in terms of any resources that users might be interested in. Now, I've been to quite a few kind of conferences and events on linked data, and the first one I remember going to a few years ago now was quite a kind of cool event, like a linked data meetup, and it was in a theatre in Hammersmith, I think, and it was very exciting because Tim Berners-Lee came as well, because it was just at the start of all this. And what I found when I went to some of those kind of events, and it was mainly developers talking, very much developers, quite interesting that they would talk about users all the time. I started to realise that their users were developers. Their users were people that could kind of would understand the underlying data and be able to create these whizzy things. They weren't what you might call kind of end users. And I think for a while with this whole linked data area, there has been a bit problematic maybe in that sense that we need to think about both, well, all types of users, so machine users and techies and developers that can do exciting things with the data, and we need to think about end users. And I think it's encapsulated a bit in this idea that, okay, you create your linked data, and then what you do is you provide a Sparkle endpoint, if any of you have heard of that, a Sparkle endpoint. So this is what a Sparkle endpoint looks like, and we provide one of those. And then we give it to you, and off you go. You can write your query and bring back the data that you want, or maybe not. I had a bit of a go with it myself, but I didn't ever get very far, I have to say. So what's expected if you have this interface is that you come up with something. Now, that's great, because the thing is, by providing something like this, you're allowing people that understand this language to put in exactly what they want and get out the data that they want. So that's great, because developers might be doing this. They might be working on behalf of end users. They might want some of your data because they're creating a subject-based portal and they just want data relating to specific subjects or people. So it makes your data very open, but the end users may be not necessarily the best means to show the benefits of linked data. So we're in the middle of a project to create an end user interface. Now, when I say we're in the middle, we really are in the middle. And I went in on last week while the developer was mid-working on this and said, I want a screen grab of it now. So this is really is a work in progress. I think it's useful to share what we're doing as we're doing it. So this is the kind of thing that we're looking to achieve. It's going to look a bit different and a bit prettier, but this is the basic principle. So we're going to have an interface that is kind of like a bit like the familiar archives have in some ways, but something slightly different, branded slightly differently, and going to bring together different data and allow users the opportunity to personalise it as much as we can, depending on the time and resources and all that kind of thing, and the challenges that we have along the way, which are many, I have to say. So I just want to take you through this a little bit. So first of all, as I said, the branding. There's been a lot of really interesting things to think about with this project. And of course, you know, as you know, one of the first things you need to start with is a good logo. Everybody needs a good logo. So I thought about that and I thought, well, if we're going to provide this kind of interface and it's going to have archives data and it's going to have external data, different sorts of data, you know, how do you want to brand it? That in itself is quite a difficult thing. Do you say it's kind of an archival interface, a biographical interface? How much do we connect it to the Archives Hub or not? You know, it's thinking about what users will expect, what they will understand this to be. So it's quite a difficult thing to decide, really. In the end, unless we change our minds, I think at the moment we're going for something where we've got, you can see it's the Archives Hub, but it's branded slightly differently. It has a slightly different kind of logo. That took a little bit of thinking about. Okay, so one of the first boxes, and I think this data is actually coming live now. So this data is being pulled in live from the linked data store. And actually just getting the data feed in has taken us taken our developer Lee quite a lot of time and effort for various reasons that I won't go into because I don't really understand them. So this first box here would be data that is taken directly from our records, but you can see it's not so much branded here as archival information. It's just, this is information about this person. This is identifying information that you might be interested in knowing about this person. Then the next box, which is hidden, but we're going to be jiggling around with these boxes. It sounds a bit trite in a way, but I talked to the guys working on the team and I've said, well, if we're going to have priorities, we want to bring in a certain amount of external data and we want to have a picture. So we want to have at least one picture because, you know, that kind of visual interest is part of, I think, what would make this appealing to somebody to take a closer look. And yes, this is the person I'm interested in. And so this is the first example of external data because this picture would be pulled in from Wikipedia, the linked data version of Wikipedia, which is DBpedia. It's not in our data at all, but the fact that we have those external links in our data that say that our Martha Beatrice Webb is the same Martha Beatrice Webb that is represented on Wikipedia, once you have that link, you can start to pull in information. And so we can pull in this picture of her. At the same time, what we've decided to do with this project is to kind of make it, okay, we've got external data here, we're going to provide you with other value-added stuff, but we want to have quite a strong emphasis on the sort of things that archives can provide and quite a strong emphasis on the archive side of it, if you like. And what we're particularly interested in doing is pulling out the administrative or biographical history. Some really, really useful information about the person. People can find out more about her, who she knew, where she went, what she did, etc. And so with this box, the idea is that we're pulling out all the biographical histories that we have on this person, because actually I think we have 10 for Beatrice Webb, because we have 10 collections where she is a creator or features within the collection. We think we're just going to list them in this kind of way, because that's quite a difficult thing as well. There'll be repetition of information in these. But what do you do other than kind of list them all? It would be quite difficult to come up with something different. So that's one of the interesting things around kind of name authority data and where you have a lot of different biographical histories for the same person. It's going to be an interesting experiment for us, I think. So this box on the right-hand side at the moment says other sources. So that is kind of a bit of a holding thing and we're just deciding how we're going to do this and which other sources we're going to have the time to pull in. At the moment, as you can see, it's just got links, but we're looking at how we can pull in more interesting data, more images, more formatted data, as well as links. So I guess over that side of the page, the idea is that we'd have these boxes that will actually represent the external data that we're going to bring in, and we're going to see how people react to this. So this is the sort of thing, in fact, I went to the developer last week and said, well, can we pull in this? Because this comes from the VIAF, Virtual International Authority file. So, you know, could we pull in that kind of data? I think the where the actual book image comes from is elsewhere other than VIAF, and do we have the rights to pull it in and so on. So actually, there's quite a lot of complication around that. Okay, so that's basically how it's looking at the moment. You can see the little dollar X kind of in the right-hand corner. What we're going to have there is a link or a box that you can open up and see the provenance of the data. So you can see exactly where all the different bits of data come from. And that's one thing that I really, really want to make sure that we do get into this interface, whatever else we get in. I think it's really important to show people where the data comes from that they're looking at. So I guess I've said quite a bit about why we're doing this, and it is this idea of being able to allow people to link data together to give more control to the end user, because what we're hoping is with these boxes that we can make it so people can move them and put in other boxes and so on and personalise it. Really importantly for me, it's about opening things up and saying, okay, there's archives and there's all these other sources relating to an individual in this case. How do we represent them together? What does that mean to users? How are they going to use the information? So we've got these links to other content. We need to try and make it extensible so we can build on it over time. And we're seeing it very much as an exemplar in a kind of beta stage. And it shows the sorts of things that can be done, I think. There's a lot of things that we need to think about. And these are all the things that we're kind of blogging about. So I'm not going to go through all of these, but that's partly why we have the blog. And we try to engage with people in thinking about a lot of these kinds of issues. I was going to talk about the biggest challenge. Funnily enough, I would say the biggest challenge that we've got around this is actually data quality, the quality of our data. Because when you're looking at creating linked data and how you do that, the quality of your own data has a major, major impact. And actually, it's led us to go back and look at our own data and how we can improve the consistency of our own data. The biggest constraint, I would say, not everyone on the team might say it, but at the moment there is a lack of good linked data to link to in meaningful ways, because it's like an emerging space at the moment. And the cloud makes it look like there's loads of linked data, but when you look at a lot of it, it's not very linkable to. The biggest worry, I think, is persistence of the URIs, basically. So is this, if I'm going to say my Martha Beatrice web is the same as that one there and link the URIs, well, will that URI change? That kind of thing is an issue. And I think this is just to finish. What's exciting to me about writing now is that machines aren't just part of the distribution system. They're in the writing, they're in the process. And when I read that, this is what I thought about, because I'm quite a fan of Formula One, although I think I'm going to stop now. It's on Sky, but anyway. But, you know, Formula One is one of those sports where some people hate it because it's about technology. It's about the car. It's about the engine and everything, as well as about the driver. You know, it's kind of both at once. But I think we need to start thinking a bit more like that within our space. We need to think about the technology and what we can do as exciting and enabling. And that needs to be part of the package along with the data. I think that's really, really important for us. It's this kind of idea of sharing, and we've got to think of machines as users as well as people. And this kind of work has enabled us to work with a lot of other people and think about how we share data, how we make sure we're talking about the same sorts of things, so that we can create this kind of linked data environment.
This event was recorded live on the 21st of March 2012 as part of the Archives Discovery Forum 2012 at the National Archives, Kew. This podcast is copyright to the National Archives. All rights reserved.